van Upington tot Grootdrink, Groblershoop tot Keimoes, Riemvasmaak tot Rooiputs. Radiostasie van die Suidlanders, Radio Grootervier.
Wel, welkom en goeienaand, jy is ingeskakel natuurlik by Radio Grootrivier, radiostasie van die Suidlanders, jou stem hier uit die Noord-Kaap uit en natuurlik jou Afrikaanse kulturele lekker radiostasie. En ja, vir die afgelope paar maande is ons besig met 'n lekker program op donderdagaande 6:00, die Suidlanders geselsprogram, waar ek al redelik met van die hoofde en die leiers van die Suidlanders gesels het om bietjie meer perspektief te kry oor wat agter die skerms by die organisasie aan die gang gaan. So as jy meer wil weet oor die landbou en die onttrekking en al daai goeie se, gaan gerus na ons potgooie toe op ons webtuiste en gaan luister bietjie met al die verskillende hoofde en departementshoofde en leiers wat ek al mee gesels het hier op Radio Grootrivier. En dan vir die afgelope, hoeveel kere is het nou al, is ek al 10 keer, gesels ek met Simon Roche, hy is die nationale departementshoof van buitenlands en ons gesels op die oomblik oor wêreldgebeure en soos julle weet, dinge is die wêreld, die pot is aan die kook, daar is soveel nuus en soveel dinge wat reg deur die week plaasvind, dat het is somtijds moeilik om jou vinger op alles te hou, maar dis ek om ons daarom gelukkig vir Simon het en hy lever 'n goeie perspektief oor wat alles aan die gang is. So kom ons kyk of ons vir Simon aan die hande kry. Daar sê, dit lyk my nou, het ons contact gemaakt met Simon, dankie vir julle geduld, kom ons kyk.
Arius!
Hi Simon, ek het nou net begin bekommerd raak oor jou.
Yeah, you went wrong. I can't get into my house.
Oh, yes. Ja, soos ek nou vir die luisteraars al gesê het, ons is besig met ons Suidlanders geselsprogram en jy is die nationale departementshoof van buitenlands en vanavond gesels ons weer oor 'n paar wêreldgebeure. So kom ons spring sommer reguit in het in, Simon, en ons het vroeger bietjie gesels oor NATO en Rusland, Rusland wat vir NATO gewaarsku het en gesê het, sodra hulle vir Oekraïne van hulle missiele en bomme gaan gee, dan is het so goed soos hulle gaan oorlog teen NATO begin maak, en nou het daar iets gebeur, ek dink daar was NATO missiele gebruik om ergens in Rusland te bom.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting story, because you know, those missiles are super duper advanced, like the planes that are sold around the world from one country to another, the military planes, and they possess many features that prevent them from just being used by anybody, anytime, any place, anywhere. So in order for one of those missiles to be used, if NATO sells the missile to Ukraine, NATO still has to provide, or the NATO country in question, the codes, the launch codes for that missile. On top of that, Ukraine doesn't possess the satellite surveillance capacity that is required to identify targets. And on top of that, it doesn't have the targeting capacity for the missile. So it's quite a complicated thing. And Putin's point has been that NATO has to be involved in that process. If Ukraine is firing missiles onto Russian soil, given firstly that they're NATO missiles, and secondly that NATO is operating them, because the Ukrainians haven't had the necessary training, it takes years. But even if they had the training, NATO would be providing the launch codes and the target identification and the targeting, which is a separate thing altogether. Therefore, it's as good as NATO declaring war on Russia. Now, the missiles in question are particularly the Scalp and Storm Shadow missiles, or missile, if you like. They are a joint effort by the British and the French, and they've been given different names, but they are, for all intents and purposes, one and the same missile. So those missiles, in fact, have a maximum range of about 500 kilometers. And I'm coming to the second part of your question now. The strike on the Toretsk ammunitions depot or arsenal had to have been carried out by a missile with a far greater capacity than 500 kilometers. Over the past weekend, there was a bit of a mess between the British and the Americans. What happened was that the British foreign minister and Antony Blinken, the American Secretary of State, met and concluded that they would give the Ukrainians permission to use the British Storm Shadow / French Scalp missiles on Russian soil, which is something that Volodymyr Zelensky has been pushing for ages now. They then set up a meeting between the Prime Minister and the President, and everything looked like it was good. So the new British Prime Minister and Joe Biden met, and everybody thought that there was going to be an agreement that the British would be the first to provide missiles to strike Russian soil. And Joe Biden walked into the meeting apparently in a rage, visibly in a rage, and he forbade it. And it turns out that he was obliged to forbid this genius idea of Antony Blinken and the new British foreign minister at the last minute, without even Keir Starmer, the British Prime Minister, knowing that he'd gone all that way for nothing. Expect completely different result from the meeting, because the head of the US military made it clear that these guys had taken very, very, very stupid decisions. Now, the head of the U.S. military, General Mark Milley, is not a good guy. He's not against the war, or he's not a globalist or anything like that. But apparently the rumor is that he explained to them that Russia's hitting power at the moment was such, or is such, that their retaliation is going to be, you know, it's going to just verpletter Ukraine and Great Britain, about which there's a very interesting story about the submarines that are circling Great Britain at the moment, and that this was just out of the question. So everybody was furious with him, and they canceled this thing, this permission for the Ukrainians to employ NATO weapons onto Russian soil. Excuse me. However, lo and behold, the Toretz arsenal is struck overnight yesterday. So I'm not sure speaking whether it was in yesterday's dark morning or the previous day's dark night. The instrument used was, as I say, not a Scalp or a Storm Shadow, but it appears as if it may even have been a ballistic missile. Now, ballistic missiles come in all shapes and sizes. You get big ones, you get small ones, you get long-range ones, intercontinental ballistic missiles. You get nuclear, you get non-nuclear, you get, as I say, short-range, and then you get tactical nuclear missiles, tactical ballistic missiles, I should say, which have a very small warhead. Whether it's nuclear or non-nuclear, its performance is meant to be confined to a very small area. It's a very powerful warhead, but relative to what ballistic missiles can be, it's just a fraction of the size. Nevertheless, it seems as if this taboo, if you like, this big bad wolf, this monster under the bed has been used. May not have, we're not certain yet, but it does seem as if the instrument used to blow up that arsenal was a ballistic missile rather than a cruise missile. And the only difference is, if you imagine throwing a ball, it goes in an arc that's meant to be symmetrical arcs. A cruise missile is something else altogether. It can hug the terrain. That is to say, it can fly, you know, whether it's 50 or 100 meters above the terrain. And when there's a mountain ahead, then it goes over the mountain. And once it's on the other side, it goes down again into the valley. It can zip around kopjes and whatever you like. It can perform all sorts of maneuvers. So it seems as if this was a ballistic missile, in which case it is possibly the first ballistic missile that has been used in a very, very, very long time. There are arguments to be made about the Desert Storm against Saddam Hussein, but let's not say it's the first ever, but it is certainly the first in a long time. So a huge taboo, if that's the right word, may have been broken. What's more, there is an argument being made that the arsenal at Toretsk also contained ballistic missiles. Again, not necessarily nuclear. In fact, the big experts are saying that those certainly were not nuclear explosions, not even small ones. In spite of the fact that many people in the public are saying, oh, that looks like a mushroom cloud. Well, the experts are saying no. However, they are saying that it may be, given that the explosions were so large, and there were multiple explosions, but you could see that some of those large explosions were just individual explosions. One thing had gone off, not many things simultaneously in, you know, in certain spots. So we may be contemplating the striking of a ballistic missile armory by a ballistic missile, even if neither was nuclear, which they weren't, and even if neither of them was a particularly big ballistic missile. Just that by itself is very, very, very bad enough, Marius. I know that's a long-winded answer, but I'm also familiar with the fact that most people haven't a clue what's really going on at the moment. There are a lot of terms being used with which people aren't familiar, so they end up listening to a report and come away almost none the wiser. So hopefully that was helpful.
Yeah, no, that was... Definitely, dit was, ek is ook een van die mense wat nie heeltemal seker was, wat is die verskil tussen 'n ballistiese missiel nie, en al die ander missiele nie, so dit is goed dat jy dit ook opgeklaar het, maar okay, Putin het hulle gewaarsku, en dit lyk of al die bewyse daar is, dat dit is definitief NATO, een van NATO, maak nie saak van watter land af dit nou gekom het nie, maar so, dit beteken dat Rusland gaan hierop reageer, want Rusland gaan dit nie net laat gaan nie, en dit beteken ons is nou huidiglik in 'n stadium van enige oomblik kan die bom bars van die offisiële derde wêreldoorlog afskop.
Ja, absolutely. Mr. Miller is fond of quoting a verse in from the book of Ezekiel in which the Lord talks about how he will put a hook into the jaw of Prince Gog of Magog to force him to go to war, suggesting that he doesn't want to do it. You know, he has to be hooked like a fish in order to change direction. And that is certainly, whether you're pro-Russian or anti-Russian, it seems to have been a characteristic of the Russian conduct of this brewing conflict all the way back to arguably when it began, which is not 2013 or 2014. Anybody who's familiar with Vladimir Putin's speech at the 2007 Munich Security Conference is aware that in the minds of the Russians, the antagonism, the goading by NATO behind the scenes and in subtle ways goes back to before, 2007, let's say the early 2000s. Every step of the way, Russia has said, don't do this. I'm sure we all remember where he spoke probably 15 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, about World War III. You know, the West wants World War III. He has never been rash or impulsive. And I suspect that the Lord is going to have to pull harder on that hook in his jaw. Because I suspect that Vladimir Putin is not now going to press the red button and launch 3,800 missiles, which is roughly the number varies according to whom you read or listen to. 3,800 missiles, each with potentially 10 warheads, multiple re-entry vehicles, multiple independent re-entry vehicles, MIRVs, warheads to you and me, meaning 38,000 nuclear warheads.
Sure.
All at once. I don't think that's going to be the reaction. I think that he's going to do something clever, something subtle. I think he's going to put Ukraine further and further on the back foot, and NATO is going to be obliged to cross a red line even more. So it's not that Putin is not going to kick NATO in the shin or kick them in the knee. He's going to do that, but he's not going to, you know, pull out the submachine gun, as it were. I think that we will see big dramas, but I don't think that it's D-Day just yet.
Yeah, sure. Ja, ek moet sê, Putin was nogal, soos jy sê, baie kalm en rustig met hoe hy dit gehanteer het, of al gehanteer het al vir die laaste hoeveel jare, soos jy nou al sê, 15 jaar. En, maar ja, hulle gaan definitief iets terug doen, maar ek dink, soos jy sê, dit gaan dalk baie subtle wees, totdat daar regtig waar geen dispuut kan wees, dat NATO hulle uit en uit aangeval het, dat het oogmerkend vir die publiek en reg oor die wêreld gaan wees, om te wees soos, okay, nou het hulle vir Rusland skade aangedoen, dis ooglopend, dis nie, jy moet nou dit gaan navors of dit gaan navors nie, elke Jan Rap en sy maat gaan dit weet, en miskien gaan dit dan die the straw that broke the camel's back type effect wees. Maar ja, Simon, dan het daar nog rondom Trump daar baie dinge gebeur. Ek dink meeste mense weet daar was 'n tweede sluipmoordpoging op Trump gewees, maar ek weet nie of almal weet dat daar selfs 'n derde een was nie. Wil jy dalk vir ons 'n bietjie meer daaroor vertel?
Ja, yeah, well, the you know, I don't know what to believe anymore. But firstly, let's just address the second one. So we know that the first one was the young lighty lying on the roof at the outdoor rally in Ohio or Pennsylvania, if I remember correctly. Now, more recently, Donald Trump was playing a round of golf on, what is today, Thursday, would it have been Sunday? And that round of golf, I should point out, was arranged only shortly before, call it 12 or 13 or 14 hours before. We've had a good leak to the effect that it wasn't a long-standing diary item that he would play golf that day. Now, we're talking about Mar-a-Lago, which means the sea and the lake, which is his palatial. It's actually quite small. There are only something like 38 units or something like that. I forget the number, but it's a small number. But super upmarket resort. That is on the coast. So in front of the Mar-a-Lago is the sea, and then it comes into an estuary, becomes an estuary, a lake. And he has a very famous golf course there, and he himself plays scratch. That means that he doesn't have a handicap. When you play golf, if you are a 10, that means that if you play on a 70 par course, they say, oh, if you get 80, you've done okay. According to your standard, if it takes you 80 shots to finish the course, when it takes another guy 70, you've done okay. That's your standard. That's your, you've not had a bad day. A guy who's playing scratch should always match the course par, whether it's 70, 72, 69, 73. Donald Trump plays scratch. He's a very, very, very good golfer. At the last minute, an event that he was meant to attend was cancelled, arrangements changed, and so he said, well, in that case, I'm not going to wherever, Tennessee or wherever on Sunday. I'm going to stay at home with the family, and I'm going to have a round of golf. That was leaked almost immediately. A man went and hid in bushes between the seventh and the eighth holes and waited for 12 hours. He was there almost as soon as, or very shortly after, I should say, this unusual arrangement was made. A Secret Service guy walks ahead of the president when he plays golf. So he's surrounded by however many Secret Service guys, but one guy is a sort of a verkenner, and he goes ahead. He happened to notice something, and somebody else noticed something too. So between the Secret Service guy and another, let's say, a good person, this chap was observed. His rifle was observed peeking out from the bushes. He'd hitherto, for 12 hours, gone totally unnoticed. The Secret Service guy immediately fired upon him, and shots were exchanged, and he jumped out of his hidey hole, and he jumped in his van, and he sped off, and he was eventually caught two counties away, if I'm not mistaken. This guy turns out to be a CIA asset. So, again, we have the fingerprints of the deep state. We have the fingerprints of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. We have the fingerprints of the theft of the 2016 elections. We have, you know, good reason to believe that this is the evil of the United States endeavoring to prevent Donald Trump from being elected. Lo and behold, a couple of days later, I've lost track of days and dates now. As I told you earlier, I'm not even going to say it in front of everybody else, but I was 2 days out this week. But a couple of days ago, it was reported, I believe, yesterday, so it would have been from Tuesday, at a Trump rally, the police, a truck. There wasn't an occupant. They found a truck. They discovered a truck with explosives in it. How they were intending to use it, whether the person concerned was, you know, going to wait an hour and then jump in his truck once he'd scouted out the lay of the land of the event in question, again, an outdoor event. And then jump in his truck and race towards the stage screaming, Allahu Akbar, or what? I have absolutely no idea, and I haven't come across anybody so far who does have an idea. Everybody's just shaking their heads in amazement. But there are assassination attempts, number two and potentially number three, as you asked, Marius.
Yeah, and dan het ek ook 'n video of twee gesien van daai selfde rally wat hy bygewoon het waar die bom by was, dat van die gehoor het gesê hulle velle het ongelooflik begin juk en het gebrand. So daar was die vraag gewees soos was daar dalk soos een of ander chemical wat in die lug ook gespuit was. Maar soos ek sê, dit is nie vasgemaak nie, dit is nie regte nuus nie, dis maar net sommer so een of twee video's wat ek toevallig raak gesien het van dit. Maar dan, kom ons gaan gou na die ander interessante ding wat gebeur het toe, en dit is al hierdie pagers van Hezbollah volgelinge wat ontplof het, en die ouens wat sê, luister hierso, dit is die Israëlse spesiale magte wat hierdie aanval geloods het op Hezbollah.
Yeah, you know, some years ago, the Israelis came up with a very clever plan to shut down the Natanz reactor in Iran. What they did was they infected some memory sticks with a virus, and they got somebody to give 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 somebody a gift. And the last somebody was a scientist at the Natanz reactor. So, in theory, that was a closed system. The internet I don't, you know, ek beskik nie oor die taal om dit mooi te beskryf nie. I'm not a tech guy. But the computer system of the Natanz reactor was meant to be closed circuit, like CCTV camera. And nobody could therefore attack it from outside because there was no connection with the outside world. But the Israelis had this clever plan where they gave a bunch of the scientists there, through somebody, maybe let's say a gold-plated memory stick. So this guy's very proud of his memory stick. Joy, his favorite cousin gave him that for his birthday or for the Eid. You know, after breaking the fast, it's a celebratory time for Muslims. And one or two or six or nine, however many of these guys who got these terrific gifts, took them to work and started using them at work. And in that way, the Israelis infiltrated that entire system and they got the cooling rods or something to overheat. I forget the fine details. And so they shut down or they set back by years the Irani plan to enrich uranium. Now, similarly, very, very similarly, they've figured out another kind of remote control way to harm the Hezbollah of southern Lebanon. The Hezbollah were founded in 1982 when the Israelis invaded as a resistance force. They didn't precede the Israelis. And the Israeli invasion of 1980-82 was arguably very, very difficult to defend. You know, it wasn't like Hezbollah didn't exist. Hezbollah was founded, and their sole purpose is to prevent Israel ever occupying the sovereign territory of their motherland again. And over the years, they've, you know, tussled. The Hezbollah began to believe that their cell phones were all infected with spyware. So the head of Hezbollah said to everybody, listen, we must get rid of all cell phones. And we'll use pagers instead. Great idea. What do the Israelis do? They set up a company in Hungary and another one in Dubai. And they approach, I'm not sure the name of the company. I want to say Motorola, but it's not. A pager manufacturer in Taiwan. And say to them, listen, may we have the license in the spirit of boosting productivity in Hungary and industrialization and what have you, please may we have the license to manufacture those pages. And this happens all of the time. For instance, in big military deals, very often, the recipient country will say, we will buy $100 billion of your weaponry from France or from Britain or from Russia or wherever. Instead of buying from the Americans, we'll buy from you if you will set up a factory on our soil to produce some of this $100 billion deal. So, you know, so that there's local beneficiation. Local beneficiation is the term that the ANC, for instance, uses. And they haggled backwards and forwards. Eventually, the Taiwanese said, okay, fine. You know, if you give us a 30% royalty fee, we'll let you manufacture our pages in Hungary. Great. And the business is set up. The world, little knowing that this was a Mossad operation to produce a few thousand of these things. And then through their own spies to ensure that the pager deal came to them. There are many ways to manipulate things. There are many words to whisper in different people's ears. You know, whether it's a housewife, but she's the wife of the general who's in charge of this, or whether it's a cousin or a guy that you accidentally meet on a train or a plane or an automobile, or whether it's a chap that you discover miraculously he believes all of the same religion as you, or that he comes from the same dorpie as you, buite Brakpan, Suid-Afrika, kan jy dit glo? Hy is een van my mense, ek moet hom mos vertrou. Almal weet, agente en spioene kom nie van Brakpan se wêreld af nie. You know, this is, it's very, very easy to fool people. And one way or the other, they managed to manipulate it so that, lo and behold, Hezbollah send their okies out into the field to procure these pages, and they fall into the hands of this Israeli operation, very elaborate operation. They buy up all the pages, they give them to their mana, and boom, the pages go off at the same time, blowing people's hands off and blowing holes in their stomachs and in their pelvises and on their hips and if you've got it in your pocket and you've got a nice long pocket, then blowing a hole in your thigh, or if you keep it in your breast pocket or your inside pocket of your jacket, blowing a hole in your heart or your lungs and so on. So we've seen these very gruesome injuries. We saw that the day before yesterday. And then, of course, yesterday we had the follow-up to that with the walkie-talkies. And apparently I'm hearing, I don't know, this is not confirmed, that they are Motorola walkie-talkies. So doubtless over the next few days we're going to discover more information. There's going to be another batch of leaks of, you know, how Motorola was fooled into doing this or how somebody got a license to produce Motorolas in Israel and they put little bomblets inside the walkie-talkies. Goodness knows. It's coming out. There's a lot coming out at the moment. I think that we're almost at the point, Marius, where talking about what's going on, to me, other people might feel differently, and that's perfectly normal, I think. I'd go so far as to say my position is abnormal, but to me, it's the right position now. It almost doesn't matter what's going on out there. If you still need to know what's going on out there, you've missed the whole point. The point now is not to know. It's not to say, hang on, everybody, I'm going to sit here on one side and I'm going to count the number of bullets flying in a certain, you know, fight, shooting match, hundreds of guys shooting thousands of bullets, so that I know just how bad things are, and then I'll get involved later. There are enough things occurring right now for you and me to know that the world has suddenly gotten extremely dangerous. And we should just forget about the daily news, as far as I'm concerned, and focus on how do we handle this. For me, as a for instance, my three sons are traveling down to see me over this coming weekend. I'm going to be given a last chance to speak to them about the severity of affairs in the world. I am going to give them one of my motor vehicles to take back so that they have yet another vehicle. If I get the opportunity, I will go up to them. In other words, if we have a repeat of the riots of July, 8th to the 14th of July, 2021, particularly, but not only in KwaZulu-Natal, then I will dash up there to Johannesburg. But if I don't have that opportunity, well, they've got the extra car, the beautiful, strong car. And as I say, even if they're too fast asleep to leave, may God forbid it, I will be able to speak to them this weekend. And I just feel as if that is all that we have left now. Worrying about whether the bullet missed Donald Trump by 3 centimeters or 6 centimeters, and agonizing over endless diagrams of how close it was and how thick his skull is and how far it was from his brain and how much the wind was blowing and whether there were 2 shooters or 6 shooters or 9 shooters or 12 shooters. I think it's far beyond that. We've got NATO using ballistic missiles to blow up one of the biggest arsenals in the world, an arsenal which may or may not have had its own ballistic missiles in it. Donald Trump, at least 2 assassination attempts, perhaps 3. And there's a very interesting story that I've seen almost nobody cover of there is a belief in certain circles that, in fact, these were not assassination attempts 2 and potentially 3, but three and potentially four. The week after the shooting, he was traveling in the north towards Idaho by plane, by Trump Force One, as they call it. He was traveling from east to west over the Great Plains, the great northern, far northern states of the USA. When something occurred on the plane, nobody's sure what, and it had to make an emergency landing, and nobody's saying why. In other words, nobody's saying, oh, don't worry, don't be hysterical, guys, don't be neurotic, don't be paranoid. There was a problem with the brake flap. It turned out to be hydraulic fluid. We know that it wasn't a misdemeanor or mischief or anything like that. It was because an O-ring wore out, and yeah, we can tell that O-ring is 16 years old. It's not like somebody pulled it out or something like that. Nobody's saying that. Nobody is setting anybody's mind at ease over the strange event in the American skies in Trump Force One the week after the shooting event. So my point is just, it's time to stop counting, I feel, Marius. Now is the time to make our last preparations as if we only had one day left. That's it.
Ja, nee, definitief, Simon. En wat by my opgekom het van, veral toe ons nou gepraat het oor die pagers en Hezbollah en die hokkie-tokkies en die goederse, is dat regtig waar dit voel vir my of jy in 'n fliek lewe. Dit vir die tipe dinge wat jy op die film sien en wat die aksie flieks en hierdie ou maak, hierdie MacGyver plan om so ou uit te vat, dit is werklik besig om te gebeur, jy kan nie die normale mens, kan hom nie self indink, die jare en jare se beplanning, wat die ouens moet doen, om stikkies plofstof in pagers in te kry, so dat die Hezbollah dit kan hee, en laat hulle dan 'n aanval daarop kan maak, dit voel net of dit heeltemal verregaande is, maar dit is die tye waarin ons lewe, en soos jy sê, daar is nie 'n beter tyd soos nou, om jou stories te begin regkry, om te begin prep nie, om te begin paaierei nie, om deel te raak van 'n organisasie nie, om net, maak net beplanning, want dit kan oornag iewes skielik kan die hele wêreld verander en dit gaan teen ook so gebeur.
Ja, sorry, can you hear me?
Ja.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Marius. I think you've hit the nail right on the head. You can't make this stuff up. Now is the time to get involved. Now is the time to prepare as if, you know, there's no time left. And I think, notwithstanding what I said right at the beginning, notwithstanding the fact that I personally believe that Vladimir Putin is going to require some more antagonism before he completely loses his temper, I still say that when he does lose his temper, it is going to be, soos jy sê, oornag. And whether, you know, that event is going to take place tonight or next week or in 2 weeks' time, I don't know. And I remind you, Marius, without going into detail, we've been here long now, that the pedophiliac, satanic, death cult cabal that is claiming responsibility for being behind all of the events that are occurring in the earth on the earth now has revealed that their calendar is basically that all hell will break loose, if I can use that expression. It's the best one that comes to mind. Everything that's been happening up until now has been a prelude or a preface or a foreword to the events that will begin on Friday the 25th. I believe I've got the right date. That will begin on the night of Friday the 25th of September. So they say that from that date for the following 70 days, the seeds of the utter destruction of the world will be sown. For whatever that's worth to people, you know, if they don't like the idea of following some occult calendar, I sympathize completely with you. You're dead right. The only thing to follow is the Lord, because his timing shall prevail. But if you are one of those people like me who gets paid money to understand the ANC and to understand South African governance and to understand what's going on in governments around the world and to understand who's doing what, because you must always have somebody who plays that role, then you might just say, well, okay, fair enough. I've been warned. The bad people are saying that they're really going to pull the trigger by the 25th of September, or from the 25th of September. Heavens above. I didn't know that. Nobody told me. Okay, right. I'll buy myself a new bucky. I didn't want to. I wanted to save the money. But if this is my last time, who knows? You know, it might be useful to somebody just for me to gently remind that these people who claim to be the masters of all of this chaos are saying, you've seen nothing yet. It really begins from the 25th of September.
Wel, dankie Simon, weer eens vir 'n interessante gesels vanaand. Ons gaan nog een volgende week doen, volgende week in donderdag. Dan gaan ons so miskien 'n klein 2 weke breek doen. Ek en Simon sal nog 'n bietjie gesels oor of ons dalk een of ander iets sal kan deurhak in daai 2 weke daarna. Maar ja, volgende week nog ten minste 1 keer. En dit gaan definitief ook aangaan. Ons gaan dit definitief nie van die lug af haal nie. Ek dink daar's te veel mense wat baat vind hier uit. Maar Simon, dankie vir jou tyd weer eens. Dis altyd lekker om met jou te gesels en dan gesels ek met jou weer volgende week.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, Marius. I appreciate it.
Daai, lekker aan Simon. Tot ziens.
Dieselfde, tot ziens.